Rogan is back on YouTube, and on a recent episode of his podcast, he and Cat Williams smoke a lot of dope.
Is this marijuana talk?
I don't think so.
And in the process, have an interesting and rather outlandish conversation about history, including whether or not the ancient Egyptians had Wi-Fi.
Nile Valley.
They had electric and Wi-Fi.
But in the midst of the haze, Cat also makes some pretty good points.
The greatest trick is to make us believe that people back then were dumber and we're smarter.
Right.
And that whole thing is a fallacy.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've heard exactly what Kat is saying here and decrying from people in the YouTube comment section. The Bible was written thousands of years ago. Therefore, these ancient sheep herders, they were ignorant and knew nothing. Of course, they read like books actually and spoke multiple languages. And what do you speak? Anyway, as we can see, Joe and Kat have an interesting conversation and they have no problem exploring the depths of whether or not aliens exist or whether or not Wi-Fi was invented 11,000 years ago or whether or not superior technology was implemented in the creation of the pyramids. But I am struck by the fact that Joe is so open-minded about these subjects while so close-minded to things pertaining to Christianity and the Bible.
But if you put all your eggs in that basket and you don't have any proof at all, well, you're entering into this weird world where you don't pay attention to shit.
Today, I hope to show you that with an open mind, the Christian faith can actually really open your eyes to some realities that perhaps you once thought maybe didn't have a lot of evidence, but have way more than you possibly think. We'll talk about that and more today on Indie Thinker. Welcome to the show. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. My name is Reed Huberman, and I have an interesting show prepared for you today. We're going to be talking about Joe Rogan and his conversation with Cat Williams, which I think is pretty fascinating. Cat is an interesting cat. Let's just say that. Before we jump into that, I want to make sure that you know that we have an Indie Thinker newsletter that has great Indie Thinker extras, but beyond that, also, it will give you an idea of what we're really after here at Indie Thinker, which is so much more than a podcast. I hope that what we do here will grow to become one of the biggest Christian conservative media outlets on the planet. And so in effort to create that, we are jumping far beyond podcasts and into full-length feature documentaries. Right now, I'm in the pre-production process of a groundbreaking film called Fatherless. And Fatherless is an attempt to try to expose the breakdown of the nuclear family and who is behind it. Because right now, we are looking at cataclysmic levels of fatherlessness in America. So our documentary, Fatherless, is an attempt to try to figure out where does that come from? Why is that happening? And I think if we can make this film, we can truly make a dent in the breakdown of the nuclear family. But we need your help to do that. You can sign up for a newsletter where you can not only see the full trailer for Fatherless, but you can also find ways to help support the great work that we're doing here at Indie Thinker. If you believe that we need great conservative Christian media platforms, well, then I hope that I can create that. And I hope that if you find this channel beneficial, this podcast beneficial to you, you'll think about supporting what we're doing here with your financial gifts. Anna Kasparian of the Young Turks, apparently not a huge fan of Christianity because she had a total meltdown. I think that's fair to say, and maybe you'll agree as you see this next clip that Anna is being a little bit irrational.
I don't care what the Bible says. Like, I feel like it's a clown show. Like, these comments might be strong, but it's how I genuinely feel. I don't care that you're a Christian. I don't care what the Bible says. Like, I feel like it's a clown show. Like sitting here trying to decipher what your little mythical book has to say about these very real political issues, right? I don't care if you're Christian. In fact, I will fight for you to have your religious liberty and practice your Christianity. I believe in that. I don't believe in Christianity, which means that you do not get to dictate the way I live my life based on your religion. I don't care what the Bible says. You have every right in the world. All those women who identify with your religion have every right in the world to not get an abortion, to not take birth control, but they do not have the right to dictate my life and what I decide to do with my body. I don't care about your damn religion.
Okay, Anna, I think we get it. First of all, don't bring you home to mama during Christmas dinner because
you need Jesus.
Now, I find Anna's rant there very fascinating, and I'm going to say some things here, and they are not intended to be ad hominem, so I just hope you'll hear the heart behind some of the sarcasm that I have. By the way, the sarcasm that I have could also be called dad humor and or not being funny, so just bear with me. What Anna's rant sounds like to me as a dad is something that might come from a high school girl's bedroom saying, "Don't cramp my style, man. Don't tell me what to do, Dad." You know, the girl that has the Zac Efron poster on her wall is just trying not to be impositioned by things that might actually be beneficial to her, like, in fact, the idea that human life has intrinsic value. Now, she's not making a rational argument about whether or not babies in the womb have intrinsic value. She's just saying, "Quit telling me what to do, Dad." Beyond that, I think it's kind of hypocritical and fascinating that she's also staring in the camera and telling a bunch of Christians, "You can't tell me what to do," while she's trying to tell us what to do, because apparently we should just shut up and not make religious arguments at all. Well, I would ask you, why not? But all of that is a reflection of something much broader and bigger than Anna at the end of the day, and something we see on online spaces all the time, or at least I do. And that is the immature way in which people respond to religion, and specifically Christianity. Now, the ease with which many today can posit fake moon landings, flat earth, aliens, and even that Democrats eat people at parties in underground kind of like tunnels in Washington, D.C. So all of that can be posited and people can find it interesting. That seems a little disheartening to me because it's compounded when people like myself go into online spaces and talk about the Christian faith and then are immediately met with closed-mindedness and clouded reason and ridiculousness at the end of the day. So just the other day, I made a comment that there's more evidence for the existence of Jesus than for Alexander the Great. And one guy said to me that that is disingenuous and untrue. So, like, I'm lying about this intentionally to deceive people. So if you're a betting man, how much do you want to bet that that individual couldn't name a single scrap of evidence that confirms the existence of Alexander the Great if I asked him for it? Not to mention the fact that my statement is absolutely fact-based and true. There is way more evidence for the existence of Jesus than there is Alexander the Great. But that doesn't stop many people because of an emotional, knee-jerk response that they have to Christianity every time the word Bible and or Jesus is mentioned. I mean, honestly, I've studied this stuff for the better part of 20 years, and I know the vast majority of skeptics do not appreciate the faith enough to have logical arguments about it. I mean, perhaps the person who is most notorious here is the Christopher Hitchens, who was sorely lacking in terms of his philosophical arguments against Christianity, but was definitely witty and had a lot of slam dunks for people, but didn't really have intellectual rebuttals. So if that just triggered you, please take a breath and put to one side what I just said and put to one side perhaps what your atheist community college professor told you and just think with me for a moment. Think with me how, with ease, people like Cat Williams and Joe Rogan can approach some of the most outlandish subjects with glowing open-mindedness, as they just did in a recent conversation that they had about aliens, ancient Egyptian culture, and the pyramids. We'll jump into that today, and I will try to show you how open-mindedness about subjects with way more evidence can actually be pretty illuminating. Let's jump into it.
Weren't. Now we know they built complex stone structures, and the real speculation is they think that the people who built the pyramids built them way earlier than the conventional dating is. They think there's real evidence that shows they're 9,000, 11,000 years old. Easy.
No people built the pyramids.
No people?
No.
Who built them?
Yeah.
No people built the pyramids.
Yeah, no people built the pyramids. Before we get to actually who built the pyramids, you can probably already guess that they're going to go with some kind of superior technology, perhaps imported by aliens. Now, sure, fringe theory, but let me just be really clear that the vast majority of conversations when we talk about history are not conversations about proof as much as evidence. And the difference there is this, is can I prove to you that aliens did not build the pyramid? No more than I can prove to you that 2 + 2 = red. I can't prove to you that they didn't. But you really can't prove to me that they did. And you'll see, there's nothing but superficial evidence that's going to be provided moving forward. But the reason I bring that up is it's important to frame this conversation as an evidence-based conversation for this reason, that very often in the same way that we talk about history, because very often we have some evidence, but we don't really know what took place, in the same way those conversations are based simply upon evidence, not proof, again, important distinction, conversations about faith are done the same way. I understand that people associate religious conversation about the Bible, Jesus, and all that stuff, they associate that with blind faith, and they associate that with mythological belief very often. But that is not the way in which Christians really are supposed to, or even do on the regular, operate here. At least as an apologist, I would argue for this, that what we need to be having is evidence-based conversation, whether you're a skeptic, atheist, agnostic, or whether or not you're a Christian. Let's have a conversation about evidence before we assume too much, and certainly before we derive any conclusions whatsoever. Let's just make sure that we're parsing out the evidence. So let's hear the evidence from Joe Rogan and Cat Williams that the pyramids were not built by human beings.
Advanced machinery was in usage. Look, there. This whole thing where slaves are stronger people is a fallacy. We like to believe that slaves are stronger. Slaves are weaker because they don't eat the right food and they live a terrible life. Your slave population is not smarter and better conditioned unless you're enslaving the Jews.
The pyramid. They stopped thinking that quite a while ago. They think it was actually skilled labor because of the way they were eating. They found what their camps were, where their food was. They ate like very good food. So they think they were actually skilled labor, but also probably forced skilled labor. But that's probably not the people who built it. That's probably the people that were working on it. That's the, yeah. Probably the people that...
Okay, I think it's fair to say at least that they're alluding to the idea that aliens, that's where this conversation is headed with both of these guys. Rather, I think if we're going to have an evidence-based conversation and not just an interesting conversation, we might find a source of material, an ancient book, as it were, that tells us about how the Egyptians might have built the pyramids. And of course, you know where I'm going here. The Old Testament, the book of Exodus, tells us that the Egyptians forced the Hebrew people into slavery. It doesn't just tell us that. If you read the very early pages of Exodus, you will see that not only were they forced to build for the Egyptians, but also that the population of the Hebrews was outpacing that of the ancient Egyptians. Now, one of the strongest cultures in human history was being outpaced by this small little group of Hebrews. Now, obviously, the Bible shows that there was kind of this divine blessing upon them and all of that, but the whole point is that we see some logical evidence here from which we can draw conclusions. We have forced labor and we have large numbers of people. Now, I can understand why today we don't think that's possible, because largely we think we've accomplished something if we go to work and then watch an episode of our favorite show on Netflix. Or maybe even binge the whole season, because, you know, you got to have life goals. So today, that's kind of progress for us, but we don't really know what it's like to have large, I'm talking large groups of people all working toward a common goal. Maybe that's kind of fitting, that Freudian slip there. It's like we spend our time twerking while they spent their time working. So it's perfectly plausible and evidence-based that this ancient text gives us a reasonable conclusion for how the pyramids may have been built if you have large numbers of people working toward this one singular goal. So already we see the Bible slowly but surely kind of converging on their conversation, whether these guys know it or not. If we're going to have an evidence-based conversation, we might need to look at the evidence that's staring us in the face. Let's keep going.
See inside when they have those intricate carvings and paintings and stuff in gold and stuff. You have to remember, this is in a windowless room, folks. There's no candle soot. There's no... this. it's clearly a power plant and built specifically for that location on this planet. For
what do you think it was powered by?
Hot water springs underneath it.
So it was powered by the hot water springs? And to but what to what end? How do you know all this, first of all? Is this marijuana talk?
Most likely.
I don't think so. This is...
Where did you read this?
If you follow information about humankind, you find out.
So information about humankind. I just want to stop there real quick. What does he mean? If you follow information about humankind, does it mean history? Well, now we're getting somewhere, because yes, we should look at historical evidence.
That in all parts of history, people were coming to this region for their information and their knowledge and their things
yes.
that were forbidden and yep. their... These were not these were the highest of human civilization.
Here. Not even comparable to anyone else.
No.
Nor since. Nor
now
since.
Now or yeah.
Nor since.
Right.
The Great Pyramid of Giza is insane.
Right. Like
it's insane.
Like even Tesla says that this is where he came to get the information. But if you follow that information pathway, it leads you to this character called Thoth, right? And the emerald tablets of Thoth are literally mind-changing and mind-blowing, just because you understand when this was written and the terminology being used is...
When was it written?
Far too accurate for now. So... I'm sure that...
Here it is. Emerald Tablet. Also known as the Smaragdine Tablet, or the Tabula Smaragdina. Boy, I fucked that up. It's
Hermes,
a compact... and
Trismegistus.
Yeah. A cryptic hermetic text, it was highly regarded by Islamic and European alchemists as the foundation of their art. Though attributed to the legendary Hellenistic figure Hermes Trismegistus, how do you say it, bro? Trismegistus.
Yeah.
The text of the Emerald Tablet first appears in a number of early medieval Arabic sources, the oldest of which dates to the late 8th or early 9th century. It was translated into Latin several times in the 12th and 13th centuries. Numerous interpretations and commentaries followed. So what does it say, though? The Egyptian god Thoth. Okay, it says, beginning in the 2nd century BC onwards, Greek texts attributed to Hermes, a syncretic combination of Greek god Hermes and the Egyptian god Thoth, appeared in Greco-Roman Egypt. Those texts known as the Hermetica are a heterogeneous collection of works that in the modern day era are commonly subdivided into two groups. The technical Hermetica, comprising of astrological, medico-botanical, alchemical, and magical writings, and the religio-philosophical Hermetica, comprising of mystical philosophical writings. Holy shit.
Is this weed talk, Joseph?
No, this is so legit.
So legit, my man.
So this dude was probably an alien.
Dude, first of all, there are no probablys.
Yeah.
That's the benefit once you hear it or read it, is the fact that it's given in first person and that's not possible. The things that are being said are impossible. Enough time has passed, though. That it's not like that. But
I'm going to read that.
He literally says, hey, there's a spaceship on Earth, and this is where it is.
So is that the weed talking? Well, I don't know. A spaceship on Earth, and if we have evidence for that. You tell me. But I do want to mention that I know people are going to say, Reed, why are you taking this weed talk so seriously? Well, part of the reason is because 14 million people at the time that I saw this had already watched this episode. Joe Rogan is the biggest podcaster on the planet. And I envision the vast majority of people thinking this is kind of an interesting conversation. And I'm arguing the way I am today because I think you should think it's interesting. However, what I think you should also be willing to do is understand when you have superior evidence and when you have evidence that can actually rise to the level of pushing you toward conclusions. And these Emerald Tablets do not do that. So I did take some time to research a little bit, and I found that these Emerald Tablets have never been found. All we have is references to them kind of beginning in circa 800 or something like that, but never have these tablets ever been discovered at all. And maybe you already kind of know where I'm going with this, because while we may not have original manuscripts for the Bible, we do have a ton of archaeological evidence, a ton of historical evidence, and we do have copies of original manuscripts that have been handed down to us that give us a lot of evidence that we need to grapple with before we have an emotional response to claims of religion, Christianity, and the Bible. So all I'm arguing for today is just to keep an open mind. And keep an open mind to things like this. Did you know that the biblical Sodom and Gomorrah was found? Not only do scholars think that it was found because there was a dig site where a city was found in the exact location that the Bible describes where Sodom and Gomorrah would have been, but also when they uncovered this place, there were burn marks on the buildings. But oddly enough, the burn marks didn't come from the ground up. It came from above down. So something terrestrial, something heavenly rained down upon this ancient village, whatever it was. Interestingly enough, there were some pottery shards that had this glaze over the top of them. And Stephen Miller, who I believe is the guy that found all of this, Stephen Miller sent them to be investigated in a lab. And the lab startlingly revealed that there was trinitite on these pieces of pottery. The reason that's important is that this green glaze on top of this pottery being trinitite means that there was heat applied to this pottery that is equal to that of an atomic bomb. The whole Oppenheimer thing out in the desert, when that atomic bomb went off, it turned some of the sand into green glass. Well, that same substance was on some of this material in the Sodom and Gomorrah dig site. So that means whatever burned Sodom and Gomorrah, it was equal to that of an atomic bomb. So pretty stinking hot. Moreover, I can also point you to the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Dead Sea Scrolls were found in 1947, and when they were found, they were dated around 100 BC, so 100 years before Jesus. And on these scrolls were inscriptions of the Old Testament. There were some other books and some other things that had been written, but the most important part of the find was that we had every single book, except for the book of Esther, represented in these manuscripts, these ancient manuscripts from before Jesus was around. And the most important find among them was something called the Isaiah Scroll. The reason it was so important is that the Dead Sea Scrolls represented a group of texts that were 1,000 years older than the oldest manuscript that we had at the time. I believe it was called the Aleppo Codex, but that was around 900 AD. Now, here we have something 1,000 years older. And then when Isaiah was compared in the Dead Sea Scrolls to what we had in our Bible at the time, they were almost identical to each other. So that means that after thousands of years, the book of Isaiah had not changed at all. Not only does that give you faith that the Old Testament was preserved faithfully, but it also gives you belief that the New Testament that was written in a much shorter span of time and turned around much shorter from the life of Jesus, that it gives you faith that that was preserved in such a way as to give you enough evidence to believe that you're reading a pretty faithful document there. And perhaps my favorite, the Merneptah Stele. Pharaoh Merneptah had this huge, what I guess I can just call a stone, a stele, with writing all over it commemorating his reign. At the very bottom of that stele was a reference to a small people group. Now, what's interesting about that is that small people group was interpreted later to be the Hebrews. And that stele was dated around the time of the book of Judges. Prior to that, nobody believed in a kind of biblical dating for the Exodus because they didn't think that the Hebrew people were really a people group at that point in time. But the Merneptah stele proved that the Hebrews were around at that time and were prominent enough to be mentioned in that stele. So it gave scholars a little bit of consternation because they had to now reframe their dating to go back to a more biblical form of dating. So now I don't want to make a non sequitur in all of this. I don't want you to think that just because I'm saying that two stone dudes are willing to posit the existence of aliens and ancient technology that far exceeds modern technology, that then therefore you should believe Jesus, right? That doesn't make sense. But what I am arguing is for just this, simply for an open mind, without spilling your brains out onto the floor, the sheer amount of nerds online that will freak out the first time a biblical apologist comes across their feed should make us a little bit unnerved for the future of America, quite frankly. But then to counterpose that with the amount of time that people can sit back and just listen to Joe Rogan drone on about aliens, it's really fascinating to me. I think the overreaction is a sort of spiritual Stockholm syndrome. So bear with me on this. If you'll be honest, some of you really can't stomach Christianity, not because there is no evidence, but simply because if you admit that Christianity may be true, it means you'll have to give up on what you've been hanging on to. Like the girl who can't admit that her boyfriend is no good for her, that she's loved somebody that is a loser and an abuser. In the same way, very often, we don't want to admit that we didn't have the wisdom and the self-esteem to really appreciate the evidence that was staring us in the face the whole time. If you can't admit that Christianity is actually very convincing, it means that you are living in denial and you don't care much about evidence. Maybe I should be honored about the emotional reaction and the cloud of reason that people showcase when it comes to Christianity and the Bible. Maybe they perceive Joe Rogan's weed-induced rants as harmless fun and they perceive Christianity as a real threat. If you do, then I can't help but say you're right. It is. Christianity will mess your life up and reveal how much of a punk you've been. You'll have to say goodbye to a multitude of sins, not the least of which is the sin of refusing Christ because of blind ideological hate. For many, that's asking too much. If that's the case, then I guess I should thank you for understanding how much is at stake in the Christian faith, because it is a lot. But still, it's still so damned closed-minded that I can't help but encourage you to consider our Lord and make him your Lord. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Hopefully that was helpful. If it was, I'd like to hear from you down in the comments section below. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, and go with God.